How do you feel about Ben and Jerry's ice cream?
Ooh, love Ben and Jerry's ice cream.
That's our colleague Sabra Chowdhury. She's been writing a lot about Ben and Jerry's recently. Do you have a favorite flavor?
I think fish food.
What's in fish food?
It's got all sorts of, there's bits of like chocolate and like swirly bits of vanilla and cream. And they're all so complicated. I don't really know, but it tastes delicious.
Ben & Jerry's is known for its unusual flavors, like Chunky Monkey, which is banana with fudge chunks and walnut, and Americone Dream, which is vanilla with fudge-covered waffle cone pieces. But the company also gained a reputation for corporate activism.
Sort of having a social mission has always been part and parcel of the Ben & Jerry's identity. And it started out early on with things like, you know, just fair trade and paying employees a fair living wage.
Its mission extended far outside the company, with the brand speaking out on issues like LGBTQ rights, climate change, and Black Lives Matter. But last year, Ben & Jerry's took a stance that put it at odds with its own parent company, Unilever. It announced it would no longer be selling its ice cream in East Jerusalem and the West Bank. And now, Ben & Jerry's and its parent company are facing off in court.
I think what's really fascinating is just one having like a subsidiary take on its parent. It does feel, it has a little bit of the whole David Goliath feel to it.
Welcome to The Journal, our show about money, business, and power. I'm Ryan Knutson. It's Monday, August 15th. Coming up on the show, Ben & Jerry's takes on its parent company over Israel.
This episode is brought to you by Vonage. With Vonage Video API, your developers can easily create custom video experiences tailored to your business. Enhance every conversation with live video, whether it's delivering faster tech support, improving customer service, or enabling interactive meetings and events. Unlock the true video potential of your business. Discover how at Vonage.com.
Ben Cohen and Jerry Greenfield met at school in Long Island in the 1960s. After they graduated, they decided to go into business together.
They talked about starting their own bagel business together and then found the equipment to make bagels was apparently too expensive. So they both took this short ice cream course and then moved to Burlington, Vermont and basically started making their own ice cream.
And at the time, their ice cream was pretty innovative.
I think from the beginning, it was a new idea where they were taking chunks of chocolates and chunks of nuts and putting them into, you know, a vanilla base or a chocolate base. And that was actually new. Nobody else was really doing that at the time. And so they quite quickly became a premium ice cream brand that you were willing to pay a little bit more for because it was a totally different proposition and it tasted really delicious.
But it was never just about the ice cream. The company always had a social mission. Like, it had a rule that the top paid executive could never make more than 5 times what the lowest paid employee was making.
They just took sort of their values about wanting to, you know, live in a world where things were equal and where everything felt fair and tried to sort of weave that through the company from the get-go.
Here's Jerry talking about the ethos of the business in 2021.
I don't know that we were hardcore hippies per se, but we certainly believe in peace and love, not as a cliche, but that we're all in this together and our role as human beings is to help take care of each other.
In the early years, a lot of the company's stances had to do with the food industry, like not using artificial growth hormones in cows. And with these values guiding the company, Ben & Jerry's grew into an internationally famous ice cream brand. But by the 90s, the company was struggling.
Ben & Jerry's, for all of its social stances and whatnot, wasn't actually doing that well financially.
Eventually, one of the world's biggest food conglomerates started knocking on their door.
So Unilever was, and still is, the world's largest ice cream maker. And they owned all sorts of brands back in 2000, but they didn't have a premium brand. And they really wanted one to sort of compete with Haagen-Dazs, which was the premium brand of the time.
But Jerry said that he and Ben were skeptical about the offer.
Both Ben and I did not want to sell the company. Ben, very, very strongly so. Ben would have done anything to not sell the company, because any acquiring company would likely not passionately share the social values that Ben and Jerry's had.
To convince Ben and Jerry to sell, Unilever agreed to an unusual arrangement. And what was the arrangement between Unilever and Ben and Jerry's?
Unilever agreed to let Ben and Jerry's have its own board, largely comprised of independent board members that would not sort of be appointed by Unilever. Most importantly, the board was in charge of the brand integrity and the social mission.
So in other words, Ben and Jerry still had control over sort of the social mission of the ice cream company, but Unilever had control over the rest of the business.
Yes, exactly. And it wasn't just Ben and Jerry. There were other board members, but essentially the old guard, the Ben and Jerry side, you know, they're the ones who had control over the social mission, and Unilever had control over everything else.
How unusual is that?
Yeah, I don't think it's been heard of, really. And that's why, like, lawyers have sort of used Ben and Jerry's and Unilever and that deal as a case study for years and in classrooms. And, you know, it is a known, studied thing because it is so unusual.
Unilever bought Ben and Jerry's for $326 million. And eventually, Ben and Jerry gave up their seats on the board. But their socially minded vision for the company continued. It even started basing some of its ice cream flavors around certain causes, like its I Dough ice cream that was in support of gay marriage, and Home Sweet Honeycomb that supported refugees. But Sabra says that Ben & Jerry's taking a stance wasn't something that seemed to bother Unilever.
If anything, Unilever sort of held Ben & Jerry's up as an example very proudly of, here's a company that is authentic, that does have a social mission. It's part of its DNA. That's what is part of its success story. So Unilever sort of encouraged other brands to try to be like Ben & Jerry's, because it's recognized that consumers actually like not just the ice cream, but sort of the authenticity of having a brand that also cares about the world and is showing it in some way.
And then last July, Ben & Jerry's did something that put its more than two-decade-long relationship with Unilever to the test. The brand announced that it would stop selling ice cream in the West Bank and parts of East Jerusalem. Jewish settlers live in those areas, but the United Nations says they belong to Palestinians. Ben & Jerry's said the sales were inconsistent with its values.
They basically announced that this partnership with their licensee that makes the ice cream in Israel, that will be expiring at the end of next year. So that means December 2022. And they said, once that happens, we will not be renewing this agreement with the licensee.
Why did the Ben & Jerry's board want to do that?
So they had made several trips to the region after sort of hearing, they say, from customers and from sort of like human rights activists. And the board, Ben & Jerry's itself, actually has several people who are human rights activists on there, and sort of like had concerns about the occupation anyway. And so they pointed to this thing of saying, well, the United Nations says this is an illegal occupation. You know, we've done our field visits. We are not anti-Semitic, but we don't support this stance. And so, you know, to take a stand, we're no longer going to be selling in that part of the world.
Ben spoke about this decision in an interview last year.
We're always in favor of a two-state solution. The policy of the Israeli government has been to endorse these settlements in the occupied territories that keep on making it harder and harder to actually have a two-state solution.
After Ben & Jerry's put out this statement, what was the reaction like in Israel?
Strong. Yeah, I mean, it was roundly condemned.
What kinds of things were people saying?
I mean, I think the most basic one was just that, like, Ben & Jerry's was anti-Semitic. And this wasn't about a foreign policy thing, only this was an attack on Israel. You know, they were boycotting Israel, and that this was completely wrong.
And the blowback wasn't just in Israel. Ben & Jerry's stance also put it on a collision course with Unilever. That's after the break.
This episode is brought to you by Empower. If you're like most people, you've had your fair share of financial questions. Questions like, will you be able to afford a third kid? Will you be able to do everything you want when you retire? What if you outlive your savings? Empower knows these questions can be stressful, so they're here to help answer your what-ifs and empower what's next. Join 18 million Americans and take control of your financial future. Tap the banner to learn more or visit empower.com.
This episode is brought to you by Vonage. With Vonage Video API, your developers can easily create custom video experiences tailored to your business. Enhance every conversation with live video, whether it's delivering faster tech support, improving customer service, or enabling interactive meetings and events. Unlock the true video potential of your business. Discover how at Vonage.com.
After Ben & Jerry's said it no longer planned to sell its ice cream in parts of East Jerusalem and the West Bank, the reaction in Israel was fierce. The Israeli Foreign Ministry issued a statement describing Ben & Jerry's decision as, quote, immoral and discriminatory. The economy minister even posted a video on TikTok of her throwing a pint of Ben & Jerry's ice cream in the trash. Initially, Ben & Jerry's parent company, Unilever, appeared to support the brand's decision to stop selling its ice cream in parts of Israel.
They sort of said, Ben & Jerry's has the right to make its own decisions. We support that right. We signed this merger agreement. We gave them this autonomy. So they didn't come out and say, we support the decision. They said, we support Ben & Jerry's right to make the decision.
The pressure on Unilever began to build. Israel's then Prime Minister Naftali Bennett called Unilever's chief executive, Alan Jope, and warned him that there could be severe consequences to Ben & Jerry's decision.
And this came at a time when Unilever shares were down. You know, the company had already been under a lot of pressure because its sales growth was lackluster, you know, at best compared to companies like Nestle and Procter & Gamble. So Unilever was under the gun already.
Pressure began to build from within the business community, too. Big pension funds threatened to divest Unilever shares, and a well-known activist investor named Nelson Peltz, who recently became a board member, was also unhappy.
And so I think having the pressure coming from him specifically, and then Israeli politicians as high up as the prime minister, plus the big pension funds that were moving to divest Unilever shares in the US, and then all the many consumers who would have written in and tweeted, you know, all of this just sort of came out of nowhere and felt like an enormous amount of pressure.
In June of this year, Unilever made a surprising announcement. It said it was going to break off Ben & Jerry's business in Israel and sell it to a local distributor there, meaning Ben & Jerry's branded ice cream would still be available in the territories that it had tried to pull out from.
Unilever had essentially overturned their decision. And that's when things got really, really ugly, really quickly.
Ben & Jerry's wanted to stop the sale.
Ben & Jerry's had a special board meeting, and they sort of all sat down. There are 7 board members, 2 Unilever representatives, 5 Ben & Jerry representatives. And the question was, well, what should we do? And should we sue Unilever to try and get this sale blocked? And so the 5 Ben & Jerry independent directors voted yes. The 2 Unilever ones, unsurprisingly, voted no. And so Ben & Jerry's, they filed a lawsuit against Unilever.
But the brand was too late.
Unilever had moved incredibly quickly. And so the sale was done. Within a couple of days, the sale was done. So there wasn't much that Ben & Jerry's could do in terms of blocking that sale.
They decided to sue Unilever anyway, for 2 reasons. One was to set limits around what the new owner in Israel could do.
They filed a preliminary injunction that moved away from blocking the sale to saying, okay, we want to make sure that if we launched a new flavor that was, say, pro-Palestine, we don't want a licensee to be able to use that exact recipe and just brand it, call it whatever else he wants that's pro-Israel and sort of turn our social mission on its head.
The second reason was so that Ben & Jerry's could get clarity around what Unilever is allowed to do in the future.
The lawsuit itself is seeking to clarify the responsibilities and the rights that the Ben & Jerry's board has going forward. So they say, you've essentially overturned our right to protect the social mission and the brand integrity by making this move, by, you know, selling the Israeli business unilaterally without consulting us. And so we're suing you because we want a judge to look back on the merger agreement and tell us exactly what rights we do, in fact, still have.
Is there any precedent for something like this, where a subsidiary is suing its parent company?
No. And I talked to several lawyers and asked them that question. And, you know, never say never. There might be like a tiny company we've never heard of somewhere suing another company, or maybe in a different part of the world. But generally, nobody that I had spoken to had heard of something like this. And the reason is your parent company is your sole shareholder.
And Unilever has decided to fight back.
So Unilever has actually argued that Ben & Jerry's has no standing to bring this case, because they say the case was not brought by Ben & Jerry's. It was brought by Ben & Jerry's independent directors who are not the same as the company. And they're saying Ben & Jerry's and Unilever are one and the same because Unilever is the sole shareholder. So they sort of say that you don't even have the standing to bring this case because we are Ben & Jerry's.
Last month, Unilever CEO Alan Jope said that Ben & Jerry's should stick to issues like climate change. He said, quote, there is plenty for Ben & Jerry's to get their teeth into on their social justice mission without straying into geopolitics. What do you think this situation says about how difficult it can be for companies to wade into social and political causes?
Most companies seem to want to champion social causes, but don't seem to want to champion political causes. And the ones that do sort of always seem to, you know, get criticized or sort of really wrapped on the knuckles. And I find it's usually privately held companies that can do this. And so I think especially for a consumer goods company or a retail company that is outward facing, taking on a social mission is often fine. Taking on a political stance generally just doesn't go well.
So this lawsuit between Ben & Jerry's and its parent company, how do you think it's going to end?
It's a million-dollar question. I don't really have the answer to that, and it's something that I've been thinking about a lot lately because I don't really see how this ends. I think if the court decision goes Ben & Jerry's way, you know, they become a big liability potentially for Unilever now that they're in the spotlight. If they did other stuff that felt really controversial, the other option is if it goes Unilever's way and the court says, no, Ben & Jerry's, you know, it was well within Unilever's rights to sell the Israeli business without consulting you, the independent board of directors. I think that's potentially even more problematic because then you have a board that is very much at odds with the parent company. And I don't know what happens then.
That's all for today, Monday, August 15th. The Journal is a co-production of Gimlet and The Wall Street Journal. If you like the show, follow us on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. We're out every weekday afternoon. Thanks for listening. See you tomorrow.